de Wes.
Hello, Tom. How are you?
I'm doing fairly well. And are you in Springfield or Havana?
I was in Havana. I'm down in Springfield right now.
Yes, I know the church you service is in Havana. And what are you preaching on this Sunday?
How about the Bible?
Okay. All right, now we get to... Oh, you think you're funny, eh? Okay, we'll see how funny you are.
Well, you opened up to it.
All righty.
There is actually a story behind it.
Well, we'll skip that because we got so many emails that have come in this week that I thought today, I'm not going to have enough time to go through them all tomorrow on Open Mic Friday. So why don't we start today? This first email is from an individual named Tom who is really thinking of joining the Lutheran Church, having listened to Law and Gospel, but he has a question. And will you be able to answer it there, Wes?
Well, I got to hear the question.
Oh, okay, yes. he was listening to a sermon recently, and here's the question. What is the difference between a periphrastic aorist and a progressive imperfect aspect?
That one's a little bit, yeah, I'd like to know the difference on that one, too.
I think we all would. I made that one up just to put you on the spot.
Well, I guess one turn deserves another.
Yep. You start off that way, you're going to be in trouble. So the first one you can't answer. Actually, there is a distinction, and it is explained in Dr. James Veltz's book, What Does This Mean? I was reading it, so I said, boy, I've never heard of these things before. This is why when you do your sermon and I do my sermon, we really examine carefully what the scholars are saying because they got insights because they know the grammar so well, and then we pick it up after them. But let me give you another one, and this is a true email that came in, not from Tom. It's from Fred. I'm just beginning to be able to distinguish between law and gospel. Maybe over the last 2 years, I would like to know what you would recommend me to read or study to be able to get my thinking aligned with how it should be. I attend a Presbyterian church, but have been introduced to Lutheran thinking. Any suggestions would be greatly appreciated. I was in quite a bit of despair before, but thankfully I am now being exposed to better teaching. What would you suggest, Wes, as maybe outside the Bible, the number one book to help them understand law and gospel?
Luther's Small Catechism.
Yeah, I would say that would be the number one book from the Reformation. And
you know why, don't you?
Why?
Well, you know, I can tell it in a little short story from my days in Indiana.
Go.
I had a member that would do that. He was known at the place where he worked as being a Christian and of course being a Missouri Synod Lutheran. Every so often he'd come and get me a catechism from me. After about the fourth one, I'd say, okay, what are you doing with these? He said, well, he said at work they'd come up and ask me questions about the faith. And he said, finally I would say to them, I know where there's a bunch of questions with answers in it. Would you want one of those books? And they said, yeah, he'd go get them Luther's Catechism. He had many, many people join the church just off of that witness.
That's a really good idea that you could put in that paper you wrote about how people can witness. They can not only hand out tracts, but also the catechism comes in a nice little leaflet, too.
Right. And that was, you know, I just met with the parents of the confirmants, and they wanted to pass their catechism from one kid to the other. And I sat down with them and spent 20 minutes talking how I believe that every student should have his own personal catechism, and it's something that they should carry with them, you know, all their life.
Yes. So. I would also suggest, obviously, the new Reader's Edition to C.F.W. Walther's Proper Distinctions Between Law and Gospel.
So is it yes and no?
No, that's the Reader's Edition is a really big thick book, God's No and God's Yes, written by a man named Pieper, is actually a summary of the 25 chapters that C.F.W. Walther said to the seminarians over a year and a half. Now, 21 of those chapters deal with ways in which law and gospel is misused, misapplied. Right. The first chapters talk about the proper distinctions between law and gospel, what the law is, what it is not, what the gospel is, what it is not. But
I'm not too familiar with this other one that you're talking about, the Reader's Edition.
Oh, it just came out. Yeah, it it's a huge book. And just like they have the Reader's Edition of the Book of Concord, they now have a Reader's Edition of C.F.W. Walther's Law and Gospel. Shom was the editor and did an excellent job. So that's available from Concordia Publishing House, and we would encourage Fred maybe to take a look at that one. I think he could get through the Reader's Edition. And then, of course, the Small Catechism. So between those two. Now, when you mentioned the Small Catechism, you meant with the Enchiridion, which is the questions and answers behind Luther's Catechism.
Right, yes. The one that we use in our primarily with our catechism students.
Yes. Okay, next subject. I have some serious question. When I was at your church, I saw a plaque up on the wall there, Wes, and I'm not so sure that what is written on there you should not be taking down. But
a plaque.
Yes, it had the rules for your parochial school teachers. You will not marry during the terms of your contract. You are not to keep company with men. You must be home between the hours of 8 p.m. and 6 a.m. You can't loiter downtown in ice cream stores. You cannot travel beyond the city limits unless you have permission of the chairman of the board. You may not smoke cigarettes, not dress in bright colors, under no circumstances dye your hair, and you must wear at least two petticoats? Where did you get those rules from? What Bible verse was that, Wes?
You're on a roll today. There's no question about that. I ran across that article and sent that to you as an email.
Yes. Yeah, actually, a former president of the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod, President Jerry Kieschnick, puts out some notes every now and then, and he had visited this congregation and saw in their museum that there was a kind of a plaque, Rules for Women Teachers, but it was written in 1915.
Right.
So, yeah. Can you imagine any woman teacher following any of those today?
Oh, my goodness. Well, part of me, when I looked at that, said, we have to be careful. I know that he was, he was joking around a little bit with that, with tongue-in-cheek.
But, yes.
There's a little bit of history revisionism we got to look at. Is did the male teachers have similar type rules, and were those forgotten, or,
Well, I learned, even on my vicarage, which is the third year out of the seminary where you're assigned to a congregation before you go back to the seminary for your fourth year, I learned a rule. I had over 100 shut-ins I had to see. And in order to save gas, I drove a motorcycle. And I remember going to the home of one of the shut-ins, and I had my helmet off, but I was holding it, and my cycle was out there. She wouldn't let me in the house.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah, because she could not believe that a pastor would be driving around on a motorcycle.
Were you wearing your collar?
I think I was. Yes. Yeah, when I went out on shut-ins, I would dress appropriately there. But it was kind of interesting. There were a lot of things. Remember at weddings, once the dancing started, the pastor would usually leave the reception.
Yep, in one of my parishes I served, that was a tradition.
Is that right? You were that bad a dancer, or what was it?
Yeah, well, a little bit of both.
Yeah, I know. But there's no doubt, you know, pastors, in the old days, if a pastor was divorced, that would be the end of his ministry at that place or probably elsewhere also. But that's right. Changed a little bit these days, too. So it was kind of funny reading this that there was a real desire that no one would be offended by pastors or teachers in the church.
Right, yeah. That's what I'm glad you said, that pastors and teachers, because I can remember my uncles and my father talking about my grandfather. As he would sit down with the male teacher, they would get under the window of the pastor's study and listen to those two talk, and they said, whoa, you know, the things that the teacher wasn't supposed to be doing out in the community and things of that nature. And so it wasn't just only the women. The male teachers were, and pastors were held to a standard too.
When I went to my last call, and that was in 1974, brought the U-Haul, and the first two things that came out were two motorcycles. And I remember one of the ladies looking at someone else and saying, who did we call as a pastor? So if I ever move again, I'm going to put the motorcycle at the front of the U-Haul. So it's the last thing that comes out. But pastors, we lose our ability to do or say certain things because of the office.
Right. Yeah. I knew a pastor that put political signage in front of his house, and it was of the opposite party than what the county was, and that caused a big stir in the congregation, because they didn't think that he should be taken aside, and he used the pulpit as well.
You know? Yeah. No. You should never bring in any temporal views on things as a pastor.
And I would agree with you. I don't think we need to, because we've got, if the people are properly taught in law and gospel through the sermons, through the Bible studies and things like this, they'll know how to make the correct decisions. They'll go out and do it.
Well, I remember you were telling me you had a conversation between Democrats and Republicans, and you got them to understand that they really had the same goals.
Yes.
How'd you do that?
Yes. Well, it just kind of happened naturally. I got to know some of the folk party leaders in the county up there in Mason County that I got to know, and they were talking about families and helping out families and getting kids off of drugs and things like this. And I ended up talking to the opposite side party, and they were complaining about that sort of thing. And I said, wait a minute. I said, I just heard that conversation 2 days ago with the others. So, you know, I ended up kind of being a go-between between the two, and said, look, you're talking the same talk, you know.
It's yes.
Different parties.
Yes, and so really a lot of times, I would only say 5% of what happens in the government should a pastor be talking about, and that deals with morals in regard to the Bible, like abortion, homosexuality, these kinds of things. But 95% of what the government does in assigning taxes or doing all kinds of things, there's nothing particularly biblical or unbiblical about it. It's just what happens in that area at that time. So
right.
You can have different laws between the states or between different governors, and Christians, you know, don't get disciplined if they disagree with one or the other.
And I'm a believer that we need to pay our taxes legally. I mean, obviously we get deductions off of that, but, you know, when you look at our roads, our police, our judges, our government and things like that, that all affords us a protection and some goods and services to keep our community going and get the good news of Jesus Christ out there.
Okay, here's another one, and this is from John. I pray this question makes it to your show. I have a question that has been on my mind for a while. I am a recently confirmed Lutheran within the year and feel the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod is preaching the true word from Scripture. The question is, I have close family members who are Jehovah's Witnesses. you can be sure that the theology we have is of different ends of the spectrum. Unfortunately, this began before I came to the faith. Now the conversations on differences between our theology is very sparse. It is even seemingly a hush-hush situation. My view is I have not or have ever set foot in a kingdom hall. I felt that that would be a very powerful statement to make. Now I'm not so sure. So here's what he's asking. Is it necessary for him to go to a Jehovah's Witness service in order to get an understanding of what his relatives, some of them pretty close, are believing?
I don't think going to a Jehovah's Witness kingdom setting, or for that matter, other types of that's going to get you a better understanding. I think you can get a hold of some very good books that people have written on that topic, or other culture, other types of religion, and get a good background.
Yes, the Concordia Publishing House has some items. What about Jehovah's Witnesses, for example, that at least tells you what they believe? But in light of what you said, let me share with you a thing that I did, and you tell me if you think I was wrong, or maybe we could use this for him. One of my members had a sister whose husband was a Jehovah's Witness, and she had heart surgery. They did not think she would need blood transfusion, so they hadn't asked her ahead of time, but complications arose. She was unconscious, and as a Jehovah's Witness, her husband would not permit her to have a blood transfusion, and she died. Now, her sister wasn't even sure she was Jehovah's Witness, and she asked me if I would come to the funeral with her at the Jehovah's Witness place, which I did. And it was just amazing, Wes. All that the pastor talked about is how wonderful her sister was, and how even though she has disappeared from the face of the earth, God will bring her back in his remembrance on Judgment Day because of her good works. And afterwards, we went out to eat, and I had a really good conversation with her. And one of the first things she said, Wes, was, when I was listening to that talk or sermon, I did not recognize the person he was talking about as my sister. She wasn't that good. And it really gave an opportunity for me to point out even more things. I even learned something about the Jehovah's Witness. So what I'm suggesting is John maybe should go to his pastor and ask if he would come with him to a Kingdom Hall service and then meet afterwards to discuss it. What do you think of that?
Very well said. As you were recounting that, I was hoping you were going to get to the part about take your pastor with you. Or take somebody that, you know, that's very knowledgeable. Sometimes a pastor may be better in other areas of cults and things like that than not. But certainly I would alert his pastor ahead of time and invite him to go with him. And yeah, he's going to pick up big time, just like you did. Where is Jesus in all of this?
Yeah, the pastor is going to have eyes of faith to a level more than this individual who's only been a Lutheran for about a year, and he'll be able to point out things afterwards and explain. But I think your first suggestion needs to be done. He does need to read some books. In fact, it's kind of interesting that a number of books against the Jehovah's Witness faith are written by former Jehovah's Witnesses.
Jehovah's Witnesses, you bet.
Yes. So they know what they went through, and it really makes you feel good when you have somebody writing like this and says, boy, what a difference now that he has come to the true faith he has in his attitude and in his hope for the future.
Oh, it's such, yeah, when you read writers of that description, to them it's like a breath of fresh air. It's just, their whole world is so different because of Christ now and the grace that they have, the forgiveness that they have in the Lord Jesus Christ now.
Well, as Fred said in the previous email, I was in quite a bit of despair before, but thankfully I am now being exposed to better teaching.
There you go.
And that's why I would suggest you get around an ordained pastor who should be, say, teaching the Bible on these subjects. Because if you get in a group where there's just a layman, you know, leading the Bible study, you're not going to get the insights because the laymen simply aren't trained in the Greek and the Hebrew and in the confessions of the church to the level that they need to be in order to give a proper Bible study.
Right. And your pastor really is there for Jesus, only Jesus, nothing but Jesus.
The next one is from Mary, and a little background. You'll recall last week we had a pastor talking about social networking and how we have to kind of change our way of speaking to those on the various Facebook, Twitter, etc.
Right. Yeah.
Well, Mary writes, granted, I'm an old geezer, she gives her birthday, but I begin to wonder whether people who engage in this deeply have the time or energy for a single original or deep thought. What do you think? I do not want to be accessible all the time, nor at anyone else's beck and call. Also, what happened to the urge for privacy when we spill all online? Now, what she's talking about during the broadcast, we talked about how when you get on Twitter and Facebook, you're almost accessible at all times because people will tweet you back and then they expect you to respond. And what do you think of her thinking?
Well, you know, there is her older generation that says, I don't like to be a part of that. I mean, to the degree of it's all public, I would have to agree with you. You have, you know, even you and I had an old friend that said, the more you write and the more you say, the more you have to defend. So you have to be careful with what you put out there in terms of that. And to that degree, I would agree with her. In fact, there's even times where I just turn off my cell phones, my computers, everything, and go out and do some, especially on my day off.
You have a day off?
Yeah.
Wow.
Not this week, though.
No, not this week.
Yeah, I got a wedding on Saturday, so I got to get ready for that. But one of my members, not me.
Yes, I kind of figured that.
Yeah, well, I have to watch you.
Yep. Hey,
on the other hand, there's a whole generation that's growing up living on the internet.
Yeah, that's correct. So we do need to communicate with them a bit. Now, I've got some more emails. I'm going to save them until tomorrow because we don't have enough time for any one of them. But you mentioned you had a little story about your sermon you're going to do Sunday or your reading.
My sermon that I'm doing on Sunday.
Yeah, I asked you what you're preaching. You said, well, there's a story behind that. And
about the Bible.
Go ahead.
Yeah, that occurred to me on the when I was on Vicarage many years ago. I got asked from one of the other churches, you know, what I was going to preach on. And I started talking about the text, you know, it was out of Luke or something like that. And he got wide-eyed, and he said, in other words, you're preaching on the Bible. And I said, well, what else would we do up there at the church I go to? And he began to tell a story of his pastor and several other pastors in churches in town that, you know, what was, how were you feeling sort of type day sermon, or it was a sunny day, or, you know, how you go through a surgery and things like that. And I said, you got to be kidding me. And he goes, no. I said, I'd get kicked out of the seminary, let alone, you know, the church where I'm at, unless you preached on the Bible, the scripture itself. And at core central was Jesus and how Jesus died upon the cross for the forgiveness of your sins. As a result, that slowly led him, I left Vicarage, but that slowly led him to join our church, moved him in that direction.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah. It's.
You just wonder how people don't understand this. We're Christians, which means Christ is our focus. And you don't know anything about Christ apart from the Bible, do we?
That's right.
No.
It's week in, week out, you know, and it's always coming up with that different aspect of the lesson. But like I always said to my elders, said, you know, you're not willing to die on every hill of every issue that comes up in our church. And I said, why do I need to? I said, there's 52 weeks out of the year. We have three lessons a week, so we got over 150 Bible lessons that we can use, and one of them's going to hit on the topic that we just ran across in our congregation, so you just wait till the text comes up.
Well, that's a perfect place to end. You know why?
Oh, my goodness, we're done.
So that's why I'm saving the rest for tomorrow. When are your worship services this weekend in your town of...
Havana,
yes.
On Pearl and Market Street. We're Saturday at 6 p.m., Sunday 7:45, and 10:15, 9 o'clock.
Well, thank you very much for being our guest today, our co-host, Wes, and we'll look forward to next week. Tomorrow, we're going to have Open Mic Friday, talking about mercy, grace, etc. God bless.
Listen to Law and Gospel on KFUO Radio. You can write Pastor Tom at KFUO Radio, 85 Founders Lane, St. Louis, Missouri, 63105. Or email lawgospel@lawgospel.com. Law and Gospel is archived for your listening convenience at KFUO.org.